Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews, and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of Zed Games, Australia's most beloved and premier gaming radio program. We are coming to you live from the 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane. You are listening to us around the nation on the Community Radio Network. I am Lee, and joining me in the studio for this particular episode, as ever, Razor is manning the machine.
Greetings.
I don't know what the machine does, but he's in control of it.
It's a very powerful machine.
Yes, and once again we have Zed Games intern Sean in.
I'm glad you didn't refer to me as a minion this time, which is nice, a nice change.
No, you're an intern.
Oh, good. Now, is that moving up?
I don't know.
Okay.
Whipping boy is also appropriate. We might refer to you as that from now on.
See, I'd prefer minion, I think.
Trash goblin?
No, I think that's getting worse.
All right, whipping boy it is. Ray, what's happening on this episode?
Lee, you have been playing Broken Age Part 2.
Yeah.
So you'll be giving us the full review later on in the episode.
That I will.
We also have some special guests coming in to join us live in the studio. The women behind Tits or GTFO, a theatre performance that's going to be happening here in Brisbane all May long.
Hooray! I don't know what GTFO stands for. Will you enlighten me?
It means good to feel...
Champagne radio once again, right?
Yeah.
Well done.
But let's get this episode started with the week in gaming news headlines. Sean, would you like to deliver them?
I would love to. A class action lawsuit filed against Sony for misrepresenting the graphical resolution of the PlayStation 4 game Killzone Shadowfall has been dismissed by a US federal court. Developer Guerrilla Games, a subsidiary of Sony Computer Entertainment, marketed the game as running in native 1080p resolution, which was delivered for the single-player campaign. The multiplayer component of the game was rendered at a lower resolution, but used an advanced upscaling technique to provide the illusion of 1080p. California resident Douglas Ledore filed the suit last August, seeking $5 million in damages for negligent misrepresentation, false advertisement, unfair competition, and fraud. The lawsuit was dismissed this week with prejudice, meaning that Ledore cannot ever file another suit on this matter. Under the ruling, both sides will pay their own legal costs.
That's the most boring thing ever. Oh my God, why would you file that lawsuit?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in no position to say this because, you know, I'm the host of a gaming radio program, but he needs to get a life. He was willing to dedicate that money and that much time over such a trivial matter.
And it's a class action one as well, so in the end, like, at best, he would receive, like, $27, and his lawyer would be rich. So, no. Find something else to fill your time with.
And, you know, besides all of that, I mean, the primary reason that you file a lawsuit is because you've suffered loss or damage.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about a video game that is in a slightly less resolution than what you expected it to be. I mean, there's no loss suffered there. That's not really hurting anyone.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's buying the game on the point that it is 1080p, or very few people are anyway. And if you are one of those people, maybe you should...
Write in and tell us all about it.
Tell us why.
And I don't think it would be dumped all the way down to an eye-painful resolution of like 360p. It's just a slight downgrade, right? And so I really don't see what the concern is, but okay, sure, if you feel like it. Game developers who publish through Steam have gained the ability to permanently ban users from their game. The new Game Ban Initiative allows the use of systems to detect and ban disruptive or cheating players. This is separate from the Valve anti-cheat technology that is already built into Steam.
Well, that's kind of powerful. What if you upset a game developer, though? Like, you know, as we as journalists often upset game developers because we keep harassing them for interviews, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's the only downside to this if people abuse that power. Imagine if someone left a, like you said, a negative review in either some sort of blog or maybe even on the Steam customer review page, and then that person, the developer of that game, got vengeful and decided to ban you because they have the discretion to do that. You mean that's not fair?
But
then again, if they're game journalists, though, they may use that as further fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
So look how petty Ubisoft is. They banned me for this.
We are shit stirrers of the highest order. Yeah. That was a frivolous question, actually. I am kind of impressed by this. I think it's an interesting thing to allow developers to have the ability to control what happens in their own garden, I guess, you know, in their own backyard. It'll be interesting to see what kind of stuff comes out of this, whether people do suddenly find themselves kicked out for being a jerk, or, you know, like, this might be a story where we never find out how, you know, how far this spreads, because maybe it's only the worst people.
Yeah, look, I've been playing games for a long time, and sometimes I encounter someone when I'm playing online and I think to myself, this person should definitely be banned. I would shed no tears if this person was banned for life. So, I mean, if it keeps more people like that off online games, shouting, you know, obscenities at me, then that, I'm all for it.
Players of the PC version of Grand Theft Auto 5 have reported that Rockstar Games is banning anyone who is detected using mods, even when in single-player mode. This includes cosmetic mods such as the popular Field of View modifier. A response to a banned player from Rockstar Support said, "While we do not support modding, no action will be taken against you for any mods while in single-player. However, if you attempt this while online, action may be taken against you." Thousands of affected players have taken to the official Steam page to leave negative feedback.
So the last Grand Theft Auto received quite a lot of mod, well, not support, actually, like no support really, but was modded quite heavily on the PC. People are always trying to push the graphics with it and add in like real cars, or there were some really cool ones where you could be like Iron Man or the Hulk and like float around in Liberty City. And one of the cool things that people were expecting was a similar level of attention for Grand Theft Auto 5. So if we don't have that now, it's going to be fairly disappointing for people.
It really is. And it's disheartening to hear that Rockstar themselves don't support mods at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially as you said, like Grand Theft Auto 4, the lifespan of that game was extended solely due to the mods that people were bringing out.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw people doing really cool stuff years after that game came out, and that's all thanks to the modders. So, yeah, it's a shame that their official stance is that they don't want mods at all.
Now, we remember the reason why they're totally anti-mod, though, is because of the whole hot coffee thing, which was a mod that someone created for San Andreas.
Yes.
That allowed access to the unincluded sex minigame component of the dating in that game, and that caused the whole game to be re-rated and partially discontinued, and that must have been hugely expensive for them.
Yeah, well, it was recalled here in Australia, as I remember.
Yeah, so fair enough that they, you know, don't want to say that they're not interested in mods. Maybe that means there's even weirder sex games hidden in Grand Theft Auto 5.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. God.
And Lee, you had another story that just came up today?
Yes. So there is the popular puzzle game on the mobile platform. Threes was pulled by Google from the Play Store because it was using the title 2048 as a search keyword. Now, 2048 is another game that essentially ripped it off on a very core level. Not in any way where they could do anything about it. It doesn't use any of the same art assets or anything like that. But 2048 is a clone of Threes. And it's a weird situation that the spiders that robotically searched the Play Store killed the original game and then left up what looks like there's actually dozens upon dozens of 2048 clones and Threes clones all over the App Store. If you like, you could get Flappy 2048. I don't know how that works, but I bet it's really annoying to play. They have, in the last couple of hours, added it back to the store, but I assume that would be an annoying situation if you were the developer of something that was actually really, really clever, and then not only seeing this other game just steal your lunch and you can't do anything about it, but then you get banned for referencing the fact that you're the original game. So don't do that again, Google, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, we're focusing on this because Google Play is a very open platform, but I mean, you know, Apple do this sort of stuff all the time, right?
Well, Apple's situation is different. They go through a review process before your game goes up. So it takes about 3 or 4 weeks before you can go from I've released a game to it's on the iOS store. Humans look at it the whole time through. So usually you don't end up in this kind of situation. There are clones, but they tend to get reviewed. Whereas Android allows you to just go straight to the store, and then it's only like robots that actually determined whether this was worth pulling. No humans were involved until much further down the process. They should probably get more people looking at this to make real judgment calls.
Hello, you're listening to Zed Games on Triple Z 102.1 FM. My name is Razor, and I'm joined by Lee, and also a couple of special guests. We have Caitlin and Rebecca from Tits or GTFO.
Hello.
Which is a stage production that's happening this month. Guys, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Razor. Thanks for having us.
Not a problem at all. So, Tits or GTFO is happening as a part of the Anywhere Festival that's running all month long. Would you like to tell us what the Anywhere Festival is?
Yeah, our show is part of Anywhere Theatre Festival Brisbane. The Anywhere Theatre Festival was started by local guy Paul Osich to get theatre out, get people out of, like, out of the theatres, if that makes any sense. So theatre outside of theatres and performing in houses and backyards and buses and bars. I went to a show last year that was in a barber salon, which was really cool. So it's kind of like engaging people with theatre, not necessarily in traditional spaces, because I know for me, I can't really afford to always go to the really, really, you know,
actual theatres.
The fancy stuff.
With seats.
Yeah.
Ushers, no way.
Seats with backs. Like, anyway, Theatre Festival, you're like sitting on anything. Crates, cushions, the floor, someone else. Mm. You could be sitting on anything. At our show, you're going to be in Manabar in the Valley, which we're really looking forward to. They've been a great venue. If anyone doesn't know about them, they're a video game bar. So you're going to be like watching a show about geek culture next to video game consoles.
Yeah, I like the idea of this Anywhere Festival. Like, imagine if you were on a bus and the bus was full of people just, like, doing Gregorian chants, and then you realize that you were the only audience member in the bus. I mean, that's a cool idea.
Are you pitching a show?
Yeah.
Do it.
You're in charge of that one, right?
Sounds great. So Tits or GTFO is the show that you guys are doing. Can you tell us what that's about?
Yeah, so it's a one-woman show, Ellie, who wasn't here, but it's got several characters and stories within it, and it's all about women who came up in geek culture circles and engaged with different kinds of geek culture, sort of like what that's been like for them, but also how it's informed their lives, too. It's actually based on interviews, mostly, so I went around and interviewed lots of my friends, sort of women in the Brisbane geek community, specifically. So it's things like, talk about fan fiction, conventions, just different kinds of ways women interact with media.
Yeah, and it's also a big celebration of geekdom, basically. Like, it's just a bunch of... I feel like it's, like, especially... I'm the director, Beck wrote it. Ellie, who's our performer, is also co-producing it. It's like a big girl gang, and we just got together to celebrate all the kind of stuff we love geeking and nerding out about.
Yeah, I could...
But it's also very thoughtful.
It will be thoughtful.
Cool. How are you going to utilize this space? Like, the Manabar is a great venue, but it is also kind of tiny,
so tiny,
cozy,
so
it's
small,
sweet.
It's intimate.
Sweet.
Yes, that's it.
That is so a Caitlin question. That is so not my problem, blissfully.
Yes, as a co-producer, that is exactly my problem. No, it's really great. We're doing 9 shows over three weekends, so we can get like sort of small, intimate audiences in several times over the festival. And Ellie, who's our performer, Ellie Ackerman, who's really great. We just had a rehearsal this afternoon, and it's so awesome. I'm so excited. Anyway, she's going to be in like kind of a little performance space next to the bar, if you're familiar with Manor. Mm. So everyone's going to be sitting on the bar floor, which, don't worry, like, they're going to be cushions. It's going to be clean. people at the back can sit on bar stools so that, you know, it's also wheelchair accessible if anybody needs to worry about that. It's a completely accessible venue. And Ellie's going to wow us from a very small corner of Manor. She's going to be using her personality to fill the venue.
Yeah, it'd be great to ask her this. Obviously, she's not here, but it must be a bit daunting doing a one-woman show. I mean, from start to finish, just it's all you. Like, how do you make the segments flow and all of that stuff?
Oh, and it's our first one, too, so...
Yeah.
No,
big
job.
big job. Luckily, we've got a really good script, and it all links together really well. We've been working a lot on that, and Beck and Ellie kind of brought me onto the show because I did a one woman show myself that I wrote myself and produced last year at Metro Arts, and I also did it at Fringe World Festival in Perth. So I had that, you know, about a year and a half experience of, doing a 45-50 minute show. It's just you, in a spotlight, and don't mess up. I'm so glad Ellie's not here. I hope she's not listening. Sorry, Ellie, you're going to be great.
You hope that she is listening.
I hope that this is the only way that I could give you this note. I can't tell you to your face. No. It just, like, the kind of things though, that you have to worry about though, are not things that you might think of. Like, it's things like your voice not running out. There's lots of little tricks that you can do to make sure that you can actually speak for 50 minutes. But also standing in a good posture. If you start off the show in a bad posture, like this is when I was more from my show, like I was standing still for most of the show.
It's like the fun run of theater.
It is. You got to stretch. You've got to really because if you sort of are putting all of your weight on your left foot the whole show, by the end of it, you're completely seizing up. Muscles are seizing up. And then your throat's getting tight, and you, instead of talking like "Here I am saying my lines," you're like,
"You gotta work that into the show."
Oh, bit of Mighty Mouse.
Yeah,
I'll work that in.
Yeah, the last character is totally the wordiest character as well.
It's so true. I think she's really mad at you. Actually, yeah. You should message her. No.
Okay, so Ellie will be embodying different characters throughout the performance, is that right?
Yeah.
What are some of these characters that she'll be depicting?
Well, they're based on interviews, and so some of them are more or less adaptations of interviews directly, and I will have woven a couple of different details in. One of them is just based on my experiences.
Yeah.
Which is kind of spooky. So they're kind of all themed around different interests. So there's one who's a cosplayer, based on a seasoned cosplayer friend of mine. There's one who, a fan fiction writer, and then some of them are a little bit more sort of nebulous. They engage with lots of different kinds of culture. There's kind of a strong, coming of age sort of theme throughout it.
Yeah.
Kind of like interacting with geek culture, kind of you did it when you were younger, how you do it when you're older, how the other people doing it sort of influenced you.
I think the funny thing is that you would expect a show with a coming of age theme to sort of talk about moving away from childish things, there's a big part of the show about Pokemon, but in fact, I feel like the joyous message of it is that when you actually come of age, when you actually mature, you go, oh, fuck it, I like this. I like this. I'm gonna like whatever I want.
It's one of the really interesting things about the show and the characters, because when I was doing the interviews, my first question to everybody was always, can you define geek culture for me? What does geek mean to you? And I went into the show with kind of like a working definition of my own that I thought would inform the show. But every single person gave a different answer.
Oh, cool.
And it very much became kind of the centerpiece of each person. So one of them, it was very much about enjoying the things that they enjoyed on their own without having to meet expectations. And for other people, it was about connecting and sort of like enjoying things with other people. For some, it was about creating. So it was all super different. I didn't expect that.
The other day I started a hashtag on Twitter, and it's now on Facebook and Instagram as well, called Geeking While Female, all one word. And I wanted to get a conversation going where women and girls could sort of join in and say, hey, this is a story about how I enjoy, these are the things I geek out about. And I was thinking about it. I was like, what are the parameters here? Can you talk about if you're really into baseball and you want to recite some baseball stats, you know everything about your favorite team? Is that geeking or is that jock?
That was really interesting too, because some people said ways of enjoying media, some people gave kinds of media. So
I also am really interested in the way that geeking sometimes is very linked to consumerism. You consume all of the merchandise surrounding the Marvel Universe or something like that, or you go and see all the films, so you're always consuming someone else's product. But what's great about our show is Beck really infused it with a handmade feel. Mm. So there's a real focus on She's smiling, so I'm getting this right. There's a real focus on how people are making their own experiences, I suppose. You can articulate this better than I can.
Because that was actually my definition of geek culture going in, is that it's either like a bi-directional or a multi-directional engagement with culture. It's not necessarily just consuming things. It's thinking about the things that you consume. It's creating things in response to the things that you consume, becoming a part of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I really wanted it to be about that, not just like... Mm. Buying games and owning plushies.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Which is also a big part of it.
Yeah, that's fun too. And I have many things at home.
We're speaking with Caitlin and Rebecca from the stage production Tits or GTFO, which is happening all month long. Just before we head to a song, we'll come back and speak to you some more about it. But where and when can we go and see it?
We open on Friday night. Woo! So this Friday, 7 p.m. At Manor Bar, which is in Fortitude Valley, right next to the Judith Wright Center. And it goes for 45 minutes. And afterwards, there's going to be video games and drinks. What's not to love? So we run from May 8th to May 25th.
I didn't want to open this can of worms up without pre-okaying it with you, but there's a big deal about gender representation in the media, the whole Gamergate thing.
Wait, is that... what do you mean? Is there a problem?
Some sort of
dear God, Razor, tell me more now.
There's some reading you may have to do.
Oh God,
this interview.
I've never seen the internet before, so I don't know.
Yeah, so I was just wondering, like, obviously that must have been something that crossed your mind while you're writing the piece, whether to, you know, take it on or avoid it. What was the way you decided to go?
Yeah, well, we were definitely putting the show together kind of during the Gamergate thing or in the wake of it. I can't remember. But we definitely had this really clear intent going into the show that we wanted to talk about geek women themselves and not necessarily just the things that happen to geek women in geek culture. And unfortunately, that was actually a genuine challenge because it is based on interviews. And we do have some... sort of little hints of harassment throughout the show. There's a little bit of it there. But I think so often any sort of feminism discussion or inclusion of women discussion in geek culture is just instantly drowned out by the backlash and the awfulness. So we're trying to just circumnavigate that completely.
See, we didn't want to bring it up. Just, you know.
You were so lovely. That's what some breaks are for. It's just really important to talk about the women themselves. One thing that really bothers me about discussions of women in geek circles, and it has for a long time, and I deliberately was trying to avoid it with this show, is that whenever a woman wants to have an opinion about video games, she often has to hand over her geek cred card first. You need to tell whoever you're talking to which 8 childhood consoles you owned and, like, what your favorite super obscure DC, like, C villain is before you're allowed to have an opinion. So we just, we're not
Crazy
trying to...
Crazy Quilt.
Yeah. it's just really important that we're not trying to, like, prove that women are here. That's not a question. We know that they are because we exist.
Yeah, and it's really nice. That's the nice thing about the show is we get the whole, hey, women have always been here thing out of the way and just go for the stories. And we just enjoy the stories. Yeah. And we don't spend any time proving that women are geeks or anything like that because it's obvious to us because we exist.
The belief that women aren't geeks is deeply ingrained in misogynistic geek culture, but it doesn't hold up to any sort of looking around you in a room. So we're just moving right past that, not necessarily addressing those people directly, maybe addressing more of the causes of it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of where the title of the show comes from, Tits or GTFO.
Yes. I can't believe there was an adorable child in here who didn't know what that meant. Doesn't know what that means?
Oh, was that your minion? He's beautiful.
Oh, no, I called him an adorable child on the air.
I'm sure Sean does.
He was wearing a school blazer, so
totally justified.
I was just trying to get Ray to swear on the air, that's all, actually.
We can't swear, right, because that's going to be a
problem. Oh, yeah, of course. Okay, go crazy.
Cool.
Say all the words.
Yeah.
Not crazy.
it's kind of a double-edged sword of a title because it is all women involved in the show from the production to the cast of one person to the interviews as well.
And we're also not saying that to be a woman you have to have breasts.
No.
That's not a thing. But
that,
like,
vital.
Yeah. But it's like, it's a phrase that's used to
exclude women.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a it's a synonym of there are no women on the internet. And that's often, it's that 4chan thing where if you want to claim to be a woman, you're supposed to prove it in the most obscene way possible, obviously, because it's 4chan. But I've often spoken to people about that internet rule and they believed it was sort of an equality thing, bringing everyone down to the same level. I've earnestly had people say that to me.
I had a guy say that to me over dinner last night.
Yeah, breaking down the labels, man, but in order for that to be a real thing, you have to be subscribing to the default male character version of humanity.
Exactly.
That was not engaging with.
Well, that was the whole problem. I asked this guy, I was like, he said if someone like referenced their gender unnecessarily, using, that was his word, unnecessarily, because, you know, obviously talking about your gender as a woman is unnecessary.
Nothing to do with your life.
But he said if someone was on a forum or in a game and they mentioned their boobs or something, then people would be like, tits or GTFO. Like, it's like a way of just being like, stop this, we're all genderless here.
Yes.
And I said, so if someone was like, you know, in the middle of a shootout and said, suck my dick, would someone go, hey, stop that?
Oh, well, don't bring penises into this.
And he was like, yes, and I just don't believe him.
Seamless,
I'm sorry.
Doll parts only on the internet. Alan Rickman in Dogma.
Yeah, ooh.
That Chan culture thing where they all assume like that everyone wants to have that same level of anonymity, but at the same time I think it's always assumed that everyone on 4chan is a dude anyway, so yeah.
Dude until proven guilty.
Yeah, yeah, yes, that's exactly it. Yeah.
That's how it feels, like, yeah. Really, that's how it feels, like, just even just walking down the street sometimes, like, but especially in geek culture. I personally, this show has been really great for me because I've always felt a bit loath about claiming it because I just don't, the same thing, exactly what Beck was talking about, I didn't feel like I had enough cred. Mm-hmm. Just before the show, we were sitting out there and Beck's talking about all these amazing video games that she's played, and I was like, I like Candy Crush, you know, and I always feel embarrassed. It's like, I like Candy Crush, you know what I mean? But mobile gaming is mostly used by women, I believe. The majority of people who play games on mobile gaming are female. And if you count that into all of the video games that exist, then it's like 53% of gamers are female.
Yeah, 53.
But of course, like, I feel like the fact that mostly women play mobile gaming media means that it gets dismissed outright as not a real game.
You can tell that we have to give that statistic a lot because we all knew exactly what it was. That one gets rolled out regularly.
We do have to be constantly justifying ourselves. Yes.
But you were just saying that you don't need to do that.
I know, it's like, it's so difficult, but yeah. It's kind of like,
well, this is kind of us drawing a line in the sand and saying we're not going to. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. So there.
This doesn't happen in the show. The show is about the women.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. Cool.
And just talking about the show again, video games, I imagine, are a big component of it. Do you reference any specific video games? I know you threw Pokemon out before, but
yeah,
are there others?
There's one character who's really, really obsessed with Pokemon, and that's kind of the cornerstone of her bit. But most of the video games come up in the character that's sort of based on my experiences. Should I say that?
Oh, well, you've said it now.
Is that a secret?
You
said it.
It's too late.
It's out there.
It really is out there.
I don't know
yeah.
if you're being funny or not.
Oh. I never know either.
So I talk a lot about the kind of games I was playing in high school. I was a massive Sims 2
cool.
obsessor.
Nice.
Real, like, 11 hours a day stuff.
Yeah.
but also talking about things like first-person shooters, which were definitely all the rage when I was in high school.
Yeah. I used to play a lot of Halo 3 in uni. That yeah. was a big thing. I'd go with my friends to one of the community rooms or whatever we had it on campus and just shoot each other. It was really fun.
It was definitely the defining social experience of our generation, I think.
It really was.
Chugging Mountain Dew and shooting each other.
I feel like board games, like, you know, it's a bit of a generational thing, but like board games are back
come
now.
Back.
But
yeah.
like, yeah, I do feel like there was like...
Remember those wholesome days of just shooting each other in the head and simulating the dipping and lifting of your testicles in their faces?
Oh, like, God. Oh. I never experienced that, thank goodness.
Our generation probably has shot like more of our peers than any other.
I hope so.
Okay, guys, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you along. So Tits or GTFO opens this Friday night at the Manor Bar. It's also running on Saturday and Sunday as well for the next 3 weeks, right?
Yep, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, every weekend for the next 3 weekends.
And it's $12 to get in?
It sure is.
Yep.
Bargain.
Now, Lee, you have played Broken Age Part 1, and you reviewed that for us last year.
That's right.
Part 2 has just been released. Now, this is a game by Tim Schafer's company, Double Fine.
That's right.
And this one's notable because they launched it on the back of a crowdfunding campaign.
Yes, so they were originally asking for $400,000 and ended up making around $3.5 million. And it was the first game, really, to... like make it big on Kickstarter and created a movement of other people saying, hey, you remember me? I'm an old guy. I used to make the games you like. Give me $1 million. Which sort of subsided since then because stuff's starting to come out now. Yeah, so the first part of this was released end of January in 2014. That was controversial in and of itself. They, after getting all of that money, exceeding their asking price by a significant amount, they said that they were going to have to break the game up into two parts, release the first one January last year, and then they were going to release the next chapter. I think originally it was going to be 6 months later, and that obviously didn't happen, and they upset a lot of people just by the fact that they were going to release that first bit and bankroll the second part off the sales from the first one. People felt like this was a sign that they had mismanaged the project.
Yeah, I can see how some people would be angry, especially if you did back it, because you expect that if you meet the target, or in this case, exceed it by like a fair amount, then you should be in a better position to deliver what you promised initially, right?
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, backers, you know, people who buy the first half were going to get the second part anyway. It was just going to come out much, much later. And maybe this has meant that, you know, the best case scenario is that this second half would then come out and would be even more polished and would be based off critique of the first one and would build and enhance that first part. Now, listeners who were listening at the time will remember that I was very positive about it. I said that it was a gorgeous looking game, beautifully cast, wonderfully voice acted, well written, with fun puzzles and strong metaphor that carried the whole thing through, that was dealing with themes that hadn't really been explored in video games before. The second part has come out and I hate it. I loathe it, in fact. I despise it. I hated almost every minute of it, and I felt betrayed by its existence.
Damn.
Yeah. Was not expecting that one.
Okay, that's interesting. So how... I thought it would just be, like, more of the same. That's not the case, or is it?
Well, okay, so more of the same would be good, but what you are getting here is, like, it's something that immediately undermines everything that had come before it, right?
So, are we talking about a story development?
Yes, yes we are. Something that happens within the first 3 minutes of starting this kills all of the intrigue and breaks the metaphor and everything that made the first one so endearing and so charming. So even though it still has the same cast doing fantastic work, even though it still has this wonderful hand-painted art style, suddenly everything that you're doing is nonsense and no one is reacting to the significant events of the conclusion of the previous chapter.
Okay, so it's like The Matrix Part 2.
I was about to bring that up. Yes, that was exactly the analogy I was going to reach for, that it's something where had they left it alone, it would have stood up. But as soon as they have to go back and return to that material, they can't extend that metaphor. All they can do is destroy it by going on about their fiction. And a similar thing happens here. Basically, everything that was good about the story, everything that was interesting, and everything that drove the characters is dissipated, and they don't ever return to it, and no one ever remarks upon this significant reevaluation of the characters' lives. So that's annoying and rubbish, but I'd still be able to get past that if the puzzle design was any good. But again, they're mostly terrible, and in fact, a lot of them are awful and ragingly bad, and based on just random scenarios. They're just, Yeah, it's a bad puzzle game. It's a bad adventure game from Tim Schafer and Double Fine. I love Tim Schafer and his work. You know, puzzle adventure games were what made me interested in PC gaming to begin with, and Double Fine have produced some of my favorite games of the last couple of years. And here, everyone is doing a really bad job. And I think that it actually has come down to mismanagement of this project. I think that that this second half, the story stuff is lame, and would almost be forgivable if they hadn't let the rest of the stuff suffer. You know, like, there's a lot of repetition in the second half. You are only exploring the same areas you were in the first game, but with the two different characters swapping their location around. So you're seeing all that same stuff again. There's a lot of repetition of puzzle types, but not in a fun sort of callback way. Just like, you have to do this awful thing again that you hated the first time. The issues with the interface haven't been addressed at all. It's still clearly a touch-based game that's been squeezed into having a PC and mouse interface, but it wouldn't be a good touch puzzle game anyway, because it's there's no like concise play experiences that you can have. Like, it takes too long to get into stuff, but it's also very, very clumsy, and it doesn't allow you to just sort of look around and enjoy being in a space, because there's no look function. Everything is a use, right? Which in an adventure game means that every interaction that you have in this game can only ever be either a success and proceeding with the critical path, or the wrong thing to do, which is frustrating. You know, you can't just like be and exist, which is, I think, one of the joys of something like Monkey Island, where, you know, you're in a weird place and you can look at stuff and hear interesting people say funny things about everything around you.
Right. So you think that instead of having this whole second part of the game, which is a bit rubbish, they should have just maybe dipped into their own funds or something and just extended the part A a little bit? Do you think that would have been a better result?
Yeah, it seems like there's a fair bit of filler here as well. And I think when they decided that they were going to cut it in half, they had to then pad out the first one and pad out the second one significantly to provide perceived value for people.
Okay, so it's like the Hobbit series that just came out recently.
Yeah, yes, okay. That's right. Yeah, except worse.
Worse?
Yes. Take that.
Damn.
Yeah. What I think should have actually happened is that maybe there should have been a terrible fire at Double Fine Productions.
Oh, come on now.
No one gets hurt, but all of their data gets wiped out once they release the first half. And they're so saddened by this that they decide that they can't continue with the project. That if this had been left alone, if they just finished up at the point where it was at the end of part one, it would have been a much better game. If we'd never gotten this second part, it would have been much, much better. And all they have done is just undone that hard work. I bought part one for a friend as a birthday present last year, and I'm going to have to send her a message telling her, don't keep playing, because everything that you like about it is ultimately damaged by this.
That's a real shame. So if I bought part one, do I get part two for no extra charge as a free download?
That's right, yes.
Okay, and did they go back to the crowdfunding to get money for part B, or did they just need more time to put it out?
They just needed more time to put it out. That's what it is. And that's the other thing that I don't quite understand. Like, they've produced no more significant art assets. There's one new location, and that's it. And even then, you don't get to walk around in it. It's like the voice stuff. Obviously, there's another like 4 hours worth of phenomenal celebrity voice acting on the part of Will Wheaton's in there. What's his name? Frodo. He's in there. Who else? There's a lot of like really wonderful, talented people in there. Pendleton Ward is doing stuff. Everyone that you meet is pretty charming. It's just that everything that you do with them is terrible and annoying, and that's a shame.
It really is.
Yeah, yeah. I I'm just disappointed with how this came out. I really, really enjoyed the first one. I love the company that produced it, and I would love to know what happened here, because this seems like such a major misfire. Even just, you know, on a design front, there are decisions made about which puzzles end up having to be significant because you return to them over and over again. In adventure games, you do have puzzles that you refer back to as throwback puzzles, right? And, you know, they become thematically significant to the game. But here, the things that you end up having to do repeatedly to complete the game are just annoying. They're not fun, and they don't tie into the core concept in any way either. So, yeah, I'm so hurt by this, and I hate having to say bad things about it, and yet I can't recommend it to anyone. I think no one should play the second part.
How about the first part, though? You gave that a good review. Do you think it's worth getting it just to play that first half, or do you think that if someone plays the first half, they'll inevitably be drawn to playing the second half and then have the entire experience be a negative one?
I think they should, like, if you want to play a pretty modern-ish adventure game that is gorgeous and well-written and well-crafted and well-voiced, absolutely play part one up to the conclusion of part one. But I urge you never to play part two, because it will be like watching someone drown your favorite childhood friend in front of you.
Right. And here's the big question. Would you put money into another Double Fine Kickstarter?
That's a tough one. So at the moment, one of their designers, Brad Wardell, I believe, is working on their second Kickstarter project, which looks like a really interesting tactical combat game. It's turn-based, where you are controlling a dynasty of heroes, and so as your adventurers will age out of being useful, but they will inherit traits and names and things from others. It's a great concept. People are saying that this is really good. I would be wary of Double Fine if they were going to say that they were going to put out another point-and-click adventure game, because I'm not sure they have that in them right now.
That's pretty bad, because, I mean, Double Fine are responsible for some of the most classic point-and-click adventure games of
all
time.
Well, the talent there definitely worked on some of the best, like, classic adventure games, and yet, yeah, I worry. I mean, there's the space-based game that they tried to get out on early access that also they just stopped supporting when it hit a semi-stable stage, but never actually turned into a game. I bought that because I really liked the concept and was disappointed that they just dropped it. So I think that they need to get their house in order. That's what I think. Because there's a lot of talented people there, and it would be a shame to see that fall to pieces. I want Double Fine to keep making excellent, excellent games that don't exist anywhere else. And I don't want there to be another Broken Age Part 2.
We've been talking about Broken Age Part 2 that's available for the PC.
Yeah.
Lee, thank you very much for that. And we're going to say goodbye now. It's time to end the show. Thanks very much for listening. It's been great. We'll catch you guys next week.
Bye.